You're listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson, exploring humanity's greatest mystery, awakening through awareness. Hello, greetings. Welcome, Angus here, season 2, episode 5. So how are you all doing? I hope you're very well. Your world is well, wherever you are, wherever you're listening from. Do please keep sending your lovely messages. I love getting your messages on, Insta seems to be the channel of choice these days, for better or worse. I'm slowly getting my head around Insta, but there's a huge number of you now following my work and my reels and all sorts of things on Insta. So if you haven't gone there yet, please do follow me on Insta. Angus Ford Robertson, of course, is the handle, the hashtag. I think that's right. It's a hashtag, right? Hashtag Angus Ford Robertson. Honestly, it's probably best I leave these things alone. So, moving on. Last week, where did we get to with Pete Russell? Our ongoing series with my favourite best-selling author on planet Earth, Peter Russell. Last week was kindness. That's what we did. Kindness and the need to be loved, the desire to be loved, the fundamental need that we all have to be loved, to be happy, to be safe, to be well. I think it went well. It was said, got some lovely feedback and comments from that conversation. This week, as I say, it gets a little more fruity this week. Pete and I have a little head-to-head. It's probably one of the few topics where we have not wildly diverging opinions, but yeah, we come at it from a slightly different angle. So the topic today, as you're about to hear, is suffering. The need or not for suffering in order to wake up. So we go into the purpose of suffering, and that leads very nicely into how Pete got into spirituality and meditation and this field of human consciousness, of which he's a world expert. So, yeah, I'm just going to shut up now. So put your feet up, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. Okay, Pete. Well, this is it. We're just going to get straight down to it today. I've got a number of questions which we're going to dive straight into. And if you'll permit me, I'm going to go straight for the first one on my list, which is this. Suffering. Is it necessary for an individual to suffer, in your view, before they find spirituality? Or is it that, you know, they can trundle along and they just trip up onto it naturally, if you understand? This is something that you may or may not remember. We have discussed many moons ago in Hawaii on a lovely dolphin retreat. But I never forgot the conversation because you really opened my eyes to other possibilities. I'll leave it there for now. I've got a few things, of course, to add to it in a moment. But over to you, Pete. What do you think?
As always, yes and no. It depends what we mean by suffering.
Okay.
If you mean, you know, I've got to have had, you know, abject pain, emotional, physical, mental, like, you know, I was going through this divorce and it was so bad, you know, I realized I needed to start meditating or something, or whatever it was, I've been, you know, suffering over some issue all my life, then that often is the case, that it takes some suffering like that to actually wake one up to the fact there's another way to look at life. There's more things we can do to work on ourselves to actually deal with the suffering. But then, you know, the suffering in a lighter sense, which is what we all go through. And I come back to Buddha's teaching here, which is really, you know, his Four Noble Truths, which I love, when he first sort of woke up. And it was the truth of suffering, the truth that suffering is. And, you know, I think, as you know, many people probably know, he set out as a rich prince. He left home, gave up everything, became a hippie, wandering through the forest for 6 years, looking for the end of suffering. If you look at how the word is defined in his language, Pali, suffering is dukkha, which is a negation of the word sukha, which means to be at ease and or to be content. And so dukkha is feeling dis-ease or discontent. So it doesn't mean painful suffering. It means any sense of not feeling at ease, not feeling content. So it's discontent. And in that sense, we are all suffering most of the time. And that's because we're thinking, oh, this isn't very good. I don't like the weather today. It's too hot, or it's too cold, or it's raining and I want to go for a walk. Whatever it is, we create discontent. And his insight was, we create discontent, in his terms, suffering, what I call suffering light. We create that because we wish the world weren't the way it was. We cling, this was the thing, we cling to our attachments as to how things should be. And in that sense, that's what brings everybody to some spiritual journey. They realize, I am not content, and there's a path to finding contentment. There's an inner path to finding contentment, which I want to explore. So I think that's the basic motivation. And if one weren't feeling some discontent, some dis-ease in some way or another, well, one would probably be enlightened anyway. It wouldn't need a spiritual path.
Right, right, right. Sorry, forgive me. Carry on.
No, that's my basic take. Over to you.
Okay, let me just sit with that for a second, because and that's great to hear, and it does chime very much. In a sense, I suppose what we could say is, let me see if this fits for you. I've certainly had the view of the last few years that suffering is necessary until it isn't. You know, it's like we suffer and we suffer and we suffer, and then we get more and more interested in what is causing this? Why am I feeling this way? And then we discover our yoga and our meditation and our whatever it is. And then there are these, well, in my case, significant pools of ease and stillness, which of course over time can get longer and so on. And so suffering was necessary. I personally, it's something that I share with my students very happily and transparently. I suffered in my 20s really badly with anxiety and depression and social anxiety, all sorts of things in my mid late 20s. And that, in retrospect, was the greatest gift, greatest blessing I ever had. I mean, it nearly killed me, but it was incredibly, just a great blessing, because it's now led to 22 years of profoundly easeful living and joyful work and so on, many great experiences. So, would you agree with that sort of simplification? Suffering is necessary until it isn't?
No.
Okay. No.
It's not necessary. Mm. It is often the motivation. It isn't necessary to it. It is often the motivation, as it was in your case, and I think many people's cases, is that painful suffering is the motivation. But it wasn't for me.
Yeah, well, I'd love you to say more. This is where you and I had quite a big discussion back in Hawaii. If you're okay with it, I'd love to for you to share a little bit around that of how you got involved in it.
Right. And when I say that, you know, I mean, painful. Let's distinguish between painful suffering, which is painful, whether it's emotional or whatever, it has to be physical, and suffering light, which I talked about. You know, suffering light is not feeling at ease, totally at ease, feeling discontent. So I would say suffering in one form or another is necessary until it's no longer needed, but not the abject painful suffering. I mean, because I didn't have that. That doesn't mean to say I was content. I had various discontents and various, you know, I had social feelings of social inadequacy and things that were there, like I think a lot of people do. So I had stuff going on. But that wasn't the motivation. The motivation for me was acid.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I was part of that whole subculture, and this was back in the 60s, and taking acid and having all these, you know, openings and fascinating experiences, and realizing there was another way to do this, which was the spiritual way. And that's how I got involved with the Maharishi and TM, and the Beatles had just started meditating. And that became the in vogue thing to do, was to stop taking drugs. You know, LSD is great, but that's not the real path. It's a window into where we're going. And so the motivation was to find a, you know, to explore meditation, to explore spirituality as a way of reaching these states of consciousness that I was getting through drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not to say I wasn't suffering, you know, in the suffering light was there, definitely. There was discontent, there was disease. And when I started meditating, it was like, here's contentment, here's ease.
Right,
and that was
right.
the motivation to continue. But it wasn't painful suffering that motivated me, no.
Yes, I think you've really helped me sort of perhaps upgrade my understanding of the conversation we had those many years ago, because I think we're talking about we're not too out of alignment on this, but it seems that you're saying that it doesn't need to be intense suffering such as I had with anxiety and depression. It's dis-ease, it's dissatisfaction. So I think we're talking to degree that there is some kind of dis-ease or dukkha, yeah, as you're right.
Absolutely, yeah. Dissatisfaction. I mean, that's another, you know, translation of the word dukkha is dissatisfaction. We're not satisfied. Yeah. I wasn't satisfied with life. Acid had opened me to a whole other perspective, which I wanted to explore. So there was dissatisfaction there.
But yeah.
I just object to when you say, you know, the suffering in the painful sense is necessary. I object to the word necessary. It is often the motivation for many people, but it's not necessary in my opinion.
Now, this leads nicely. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I just reminded myself of it. I'm looking at my bookshelf, So Kyle Gibran, the prophet, when he says, when he talks about, they say something, I mean, I'm just making this up now, it's not a direct quote, but the throng say to him, talk to us of suffering, and he says, your suffering is like a block of wood, essentially, that gets carved out, and that the depth of your suffering is the amount of joy you can subsequently contain.
Yes, no, I hadn't heard that one.
Right.
Yes.
Are you down with that?
Sort of. I mean, I haven't heard of it. I'm just thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Two things come to mind. Yes, I think what happens with our suffering, we get upset about something, some discontent, and we dig a groove. It's like, I'm really pissed off with what somebody did. And then, you know, 6 months later, I'm still pissed off at them. They were such a, you know, and I talk to you and say, you know, what, you know, so-and-so said was really not right. And, you know, I get into it more. I dig this groove and it becomes part of my reality that so-and-so was a stupid bastard. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, we're having a chat and you say something, you said, I don't remind me of him, whatever. So we dig a groove of suffering, whether it's a judgmental, personal, whatever it is, we tend to dig a groove. So it does get deep and we get stuck in it. We get stuck in our suffering. I would probably say, look, you know, I'm not Cahill Gibran, so.
Oh, really?
You don't take this as the prophet's word. But what comes to me is a suggestion that maybe the contrast is much greater.
Yeah.
Maybe the joy and ease that you feel when you let go of whatever stories we talked about, when you let go of whatever stories you're telling yourself, whatever it is that's creating the suffering, you're clinging, whatever you're attached to, when you let go of that, there is that quality of peace and joy. That's that ease of surrender that's there. And if you've just been in suffering light, you know, it's probably going to be, isn't this nice? If you've been in suffering heavy, it's going to be, wow.
Right. Exactly.
So the joy doesn't change, but the contrast of the subjective experience definitely changes, yes.
Mm.
That's how I would render it.
I like it. Eckhart did a piece on this, I remember 20 years ago when I was with him in Findhorn. And how did he frame it? There was something he said that certainly concurred with Kyle Gibran's take on it. It escapes me now. That's not much use, is it, to the listeners? Let me just try and remember.
Eckhart. Suffering.
Yes. There was something around. Well, okay. I remember. No, I got it. There was a piece he said that really intrigued me. He said, there's nothing really more annoying in the sense of or upsetting than someone who hasn't quite suffered enough to get anything. It's almost I'm paraphrasing, but it's like the worst thing we could experience is this sort of mediocre suffering that you just bounce along the bottom, but there's nothing profound or significant that tips us into that, hold on, no, I got to change something, you know? So I get the essence of what he's saying. And it is actually the same thing to me, as is said in the Prophet, that we need to go into that pain. Mm-hmm. And the deeper and more significant it is, actually, that is commensurate with the joy and the bliss and the that can happen later.
Yes, I agree with you. We need, and this is important, we need to go into it. Whatever the pain is, we need to go into it, explore it, get into what it is rather than just trying to get rid of it. And remember, I mean, Eckhart, his suffering would have made your suffering light. What he went through in his life, you know, that brought him to the edge of suicide. I mean, he's told me something about his childhood, his experiences. He's like, oh my God, you survived that.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, you know, here is somebody who had abject suffering, you know, really bad suffering.
Right, right.
And of course, he didn't know what it was when he let it go. He was so confused by the difference between the deep, deep groove he was in and what was happening. He had no idea what had happened.
Yeah. And just to throw one last little piece for the folk that are, a lot of people that listen to this are in therapy land, as I am. It's interesting to notice, I find it interesting to notice, that those folk that go through what we might call mediocre suffering, even when they wake up from their nightmare and they pass through it, they often forget the learnings from it, the riches, the joys, the jewels. They just, you see them 6 months later and they go, oh yeah, I'm back in the office and everything's, what problem? And you go, are you integrating your lessons for almost nothing? But the folk that have gone deep into their pain and come out the other side, that's with them. That is with them. And it's almost like, well, that's made a proper mark now. Nothing, you can't forget that. You can't erase that. Mm-hmm. So there is that piece too, that, you know, significant suffering, well, I know it's all to degree, but significant suffering is, look at that, I've turned it off. How on earth can a call come through when you're on airplane mode? I suppose they've called me on Wi-Fi, haven't they?
Yes. Well, no, airplane mode should cut off Wi-Fi.
Well, it is on airplane mode, and that call came in from somewhere. There you go. Well, now you know it's live, folks. So to that last point, I think it's just interesting, particularly for the therapeutically minded folk, to be aware that mediocre suffering can lead to a sort of a forgetting of the lessons learned. Mm-hmm. But when it's really affected one's life, it's like, that's a proper landmark right there. That's with me. What I've learned there is going forwards with me.
Yeah.
And just before we leave this subject, I know there'll be people listening that want to hear a bit about this, but where are you, because you've kindly shared about the, you know, LSD and pharmacological interventions. This is, of course, now, again, hot topic for lots of people, doing all sorts of retreats with, whether it's mushrooms or I don't know what, you know, various things, whatever it is this year. Where are you with the use of for meditational, spiritual practices? Give us a little piece on that.
Okay, a little piece. This should be a whole other podcast.
Right. Okay, well, maybe it will be. We'll see what the response is, yeah.
Okay, very simply, yes and no.
There we go.
It's a whole difficult topic. So much comes up. I mean, there are, yes, they are great openers of the mind. They can be taken in the right settings and circumstances, therapeutic, and can be very valuable with taken with experienced guides who really know how to lead you and help you. I don't condone them as party drugs. I think it's a waste of a sacrament. And a lot of people, you know, have these amazing, whatever it is, experiences and think they've contacted God and call it an entheogen because they've had this far out, all this light, and they saw angels or whatever it was. They call it an entheogen, something that puts you in touch with God. An entheogen, to my mind, that God is the experience of stillness and silence. An entheogen would be something that brings you to a state of stillness, not something that brings you to some wow, fantastic state, which is just your inner being distracted by some other great, wonderful object of experience. So that's my brief version.
And specifically ayahuasca, do you have experience on that? Is that something you've explored?
Yep.
And
yep.
Is that something that you would regard as a sacred rite and passage, a journey to be made?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not to be made, that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not absolutely not necessary. I haven't done it for a long time and not interested. I mean, it's been a great teacher for me, and I've nearly always done it, except from one occasion, I've nearly always done it with a really trusted, experienced shaman. And the one time I didn't, it was just like boring.
Right. Really?
I really encourage that. And also, I mean, it's a whole other topic, but we're into it now. There's so much sort of ayahuasca tourism, people running off to Peru and places because somebody's marketing some session with some shaman out there. And I've heard so many bad experiences, sexual abuse by the shamans, shamans don't know what they're doing, rip-offs, just handling, people coming up with all this deep, deep emotional stuff, the shamans not knowing how to handle it. So if you're going to do that, really don't go to somebody you haven't heard of. Check out, find somebody who's experienced that person, get their feedback, because it can be a disaster. So be careful. Do your research. Do your due diligence before you start doing this. It's a heavy experience, and you need somebody who can really care for you through it.
Excellent advice. I love it. Yeah, brilliant, Pete. Wonderful. Okay, we're going to leave that one there, and let's just take a few breaths. So that concludes episode 5. Next week, we explore one of the all-time classic spiritual conundrums, the question of, does free will exist? If you haven't considered that question before, or maybe you're not sure how free will is relevant to spiritual inquiry, then do listen up next week. It's a fascinating conversation, and it's something that Pete beautifully captures and simplifies, particularly perhaps for those that haven't considered the question before. So for now, wishing you well. See you next time. You've been listening to Awaken with Angus Ford Robertson. To join my Awaken program, please visit angusfordrobertson.com.